Hello and welcome to Power of the Parent, the podcast. This series is a new format and we are going to be focusing on a different topic each week, bringing you three things you need to know about whatever that may be, mainly from an employer perspective. But of course, there's plenty of reframing that parents could do to benefit from the content as well. We will be covering everything from parental leave transitions, managing boundaries, what to do when your talent pipeline looks a bit dodgy, tips on gathering feedback, and things like establishing parental support networks. So let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Power of the Parent, Three Things You Need to Know About. Today I am joined by an absolutely glorious guest, Anna Allerton. Anna is a triple accredited, trained and qualified executive coach with 20 years corporate experience. She spent 17 years at Sky as a journalist, producer and head of internal comms. I imagine there are lots of stories that she could tell there. That is what we're going to be talking about today, because today what we're going to explore are some of her coaching practice specialisms. The main thing that you need to know is that Anna is all about supporting women through those key transitions in life, all the way through from parental leave to perimenopause and menopause. So not exactly small topics, should we say, but we are coming together on this podcast, but also in a work capacity to link the conversations for individuals and that self-support that they can be giving, all the way through to employer strategies. So we are going to predominantly focus today on the three things that you need to know about perimenopause and motherhood, particularly when you have got younger children around. And whilst that might sound incredibly niche, let me tell you, it absolutely isn't. There are so many reasons why people are returning to the workplace, having just navigated what it means to have a new life in their families and also go through this transition of perimenopause in particular. So the three things that Anna is going to cover today for us are: number one, women educating themselves and the importance of that. Two, the connection between parental leave and perimenopause. And three, the line manager skills that you might not realize you've got. So I'm going to hand over to Anna and say thank you so much for joining me today. And I will let you get started with imparting your wonderful wisdom on us.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks so much for such a kind introduction, Charlotte. Yeah, so I guess to sort of caveat with why am I here talking about this? And this is kind of really ties in, doesn't it, with the why women need to educate themselves in a state of preparedness for this. So if you're listening to this thinking, oh, it's not for me, I'm not quite at that life stage yet, keep listening, because I'm hoping there's something in here that will really support you. So education and awareness about perimenopause. So this really comes from the fact that I didn't know what perimenopause was. In fact, I hadn't even heard of it, which I'm always sometimes still slightly nervous to confess. But I was 38 on maternity leave with my second daughter 5 years ago and didn't really know what was going on, but just felt really off, didn't feel myself. I had a lot of psychological symptoms of perimenopause, the anxiety, the insomnia, slightly different to the lack of sleep that we all get as new parents, loss of confidence, loss of joy, peaks and troughs of rage, and then tearful the next moment. And it was just a bit overwhelming. And I started to think that, oh, maybe this is just reality of what life is like with a toddler and a newborn. And, you know, none of us sort of know, do we, until we're in the thick of it. So I started to convince myself that this was just my new normal that I had to get used to. And then it was actually when I transitioned back into the workplace at Sky, I was leading a team of journalists. I went back into the workplace into a new role. And within 3 months, I came home and I said to my husband, I'm going to have to quit. And I think we need to go and see someone like a neurologist, because frankly, I feel like I'm going mad. And what I didn't know then was that I was just really suffering from symptoms such as brain fog and anxiety. And it was actually someone in the newsroom who said to me, Anna, look, I think the way you're behaving and the way you're feeling, you probably need to go away and research perimenopause, or at least have a conversation about it. And that's when I was a bit like, what's this? And, you know, I think that term has become a little bit more familiar to a lot of people now, hasn't it? Thanks to the menopause discussion over the last 5 years, really ramping up. So that's really why I say to women, and certainly to my clients, that we need to be educating ourselves and raising awareness around this chapter of our life cycle. And There's also a lot of negativity attached to this because, a bit like me, I can completely sympathize with people who attach a lot of the fear emotion to this stage in their life because you don't know what the heck is going on. And I didn't. And it's very scary because your mind takes you to quite serious kind of considerations of what it could be. We're not here to discuss this, but it actually starts in school, doesn't it? And unfortunately, young people are going to be learning about this now in the curriculum. So it's going to become a lot more norm for them. But it's not unusual at the age of 38 to have experienced perimenopause, despite doctors dismissing me for over a year, saying, oh, you're too young, you've just got two kids, very stressful job, you know, you just need to manage your stress a bit better. And actually, what I needed was to be heard, to be believed, and actually to be treated and diagnosed. So unfortunately, my 17-year career as a journalist and TV producer at Sky came to an end. I had to quit. But soon after that, I did get the treatment that I deserved and I did get diagnosed, and it was really effective for me. And so I was able to then put some of my own experience and put a load of my corporate professional experience and leadership skills into what is now my exec coaching business. And so anyone listening who's wondering about perimenopause needs to read about it, needs to ask questions, needs to talk about it. And certainly in the workplace, a lot of the work I do with corporates is about normalizing and opening up this conversation. I say to people, this is not about women in their 50s getting hot and angry. There's so much more than that. And I found when I talk about it and my experience, so many other women will sit on calls, on conversations, or say, oh yeah, that's me. Or I'm going through this right now. I'm lucky to work in a space with brilliant women mainly, who I can say, oh, if I don't write this down this second, my brain fog's going to just take this idea away from me and things like that. And actually, it's all about normalizing it and accepting and meeting people where they are. So I think education for individuals, but education and awareness for business is also really essential, so that we're not suddenly on this big discovery. We are preempting something and we have tools in place in order to really navigate that time effectively for ourselves.
Thank you so much for sharing that and giving us an insight into your own story there, because it's one of those conversations that I think sometimes we can fall down the trap of thinking it's something that happens to somebody else, and that it's, yeah, we've read about that or we've seen it on a social media post, or we've, yeah, there's something going on over here about a menopause conversation. But we can still have, I suppose, a bit of a detachment from it, can't we? And I know from an age perspective thing, I've just gone through a conversation with my GP about some symptoms that I was experiencing. I definitely put off going and having the conversation because I thought I'm going to be dismissed, because I'd spoken to a couple of friends and family members about it and they had been quite dismissive about it. And I think from a really nice place, from a place of, it's not going to be that, it'll be something else, almost like it was like a really big deal if it was going to be perimenopause. Whereas actually, I think in some way, I wanted it to be that and it not be something else that I couldn't, you know, what else could be diagnosed? But actually what I was met with from that GP was incredible kindness, some amazing listening, and absolutely no questions asked. Right, we're going to refer you for a blood test. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, do the other. And here's the path of care that, if the results say this, we'll do that. If the results say that, you've got this option. It was really quite a comforting experience that I was probably educating myself with the wrong things as well. So I think it is that education, I guess you probably will see it more than I do, but there will be lots of false information out there as well. And that can be quite damaging, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you've actually raised a really interesting point there, because I think for a long time, a lot of the narrative is about how bad your GP is going to be. And so actually, I think that is feeding into the data that is suggesting that there's quite a significant number of women who aren't actually going to their GP. So I think it's really important what you've highlighted there, in that there are a huge amount of brilliant GPs who are all over this. My experience was slightly different. So my experience was a number of years ago, and it was 12 appointments across 10 months. So I didn't have the best experience. And so it is a little bit of a GP lottery out there. That said, we focus on the negatives, don't we? Oh, I've heard someone say that they didn't get treated, so I'm not going to get treated. You know, let's focus on ourselves and our own needs right now. And I think that one of the really important things is about treating the symptoms. We can do so much work on ourselves in terms of reading books and educating ourselves around our nutrition and strength training, how that takes such an important role in midlife health. But nothing beats going to see a doctor and actually treating the symptoms, because everything else will fall down if that element hasn't been done. And I'm a big believer in that. And anyone who's listening, thinking, I do need to go and see a doctor, if you're not having that much success with your own GP, head to the British Menopause Association. They have a whole catalogue of menopause accredited doctors who can support you. And there may be one in your local community. But you're right to raise the point about misinformation, like anything on social media. And this is definitely the journalist in me saying, check your sources, you know, and that is so relevant now in this discussion than really anything else. And one of my sort of discomforts with social media is there's a lot of people out there telling you what you need to do. Actually, what is it that you need? And really identifying that. And there are brilliant charities, there are expert professionals out there. So just take a moment to pause and think, do I trust this person? Are they qualified? I'm not someone in my exec coaching practice that gives menopause advice. I'm not medical. I'm not medically trained. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a PT. So I really embrace my industry's code of ethics around respecting professional boundaries. My role is very much around supporting that person, navigating that transition alongside their career. So what can we do to take action so that our career isn't deeply impacted? So yeah, I think you're right. Evidence-backed information is absolutely the key here. And ask questions of friends, family members, medical professionals, even your employer may have a really trusted source of information around this subject. So it's about asking the questions. And I guess the education and awareness thing can become a bit of a full-time job of researching and asking. But I do think there is a heck of a lot more information out there now than there was 5 years ago for me. I think I found maybe one, two books that I read that set me up and served me really well to sort of advocate for myself in that medical space. But I think with a growing market, there's lots of products out there that can apparently stop a lot of symptoms. But I think ultimately it's around embracing the fact that this is a natural life cycle. It will happen to half of the population who will be directly impacted. The other half will be indirectly impacted. So everyone is a stakeholder in this. And that's why it's really important we normalize it, but also that we don't fear it. Because, you know, I think a lot of people listening might wonder, well, why do we need to have this conversation in the workplace? Women have gone through this for generations, and you kind of have to just get on with it. The fact is that life for a modern working woman now is very different than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. And that's just a fact. That's kind of how things progress and change. And so, with that, we have to start to adapt and work smarter around different situations. And while I'm talking about perimenopause and your 30s and your 40s, the workplace is also changing. So we know that women over 50 are the fastest growing demographic of the UK workforce. Businesses can't afford to lose them, and they shouldn't need to lose them either, as long as these conversations are taking place.
Which I think leads us really nicely into the second point that you're going to talk about, and that's the connection between parental leave and perimenopause. And you can obviously hear in your story just how close, well, it was like back to back for you, wasn't it? Returning from maternity leave and then being in perimenopause. So, what would you love people to hear for this point?
Well, it's really interesting because our work and our conversations together about this has really sort of highlighted some thoughts for me. Rather than approaching this as a all managers and colleagues need to train on this, yes, they do. And yes, there is a space for menopause policy. But I think a lot of the work that I do with corporates and with leaders and different workshops that I run focuses almost on the fear and what can I say, what can I do to support someone in this situation? And I would argue that actually you've probably got those transferable skills if you reframe how you're looking at it. When you look at the incredible work that has taken place over the last 10 years and continues to around mental health awareness, we're in a much better space now as individuals, but also in workplace cultures around understanding and normalizing the conversation about mental health. So if you've done that, there is some really great transferable skills there that you can apply to this conversation. If you have historically supported and you keep evolving your parental leave offering and support, and you keep growing in that mindset, you can transfer some of the key elements of that across to how you then continue the conversation or open the conversation about perimenopause and menopause. So one of the really striking things that stands out for me and my professional experience of this was that after 3 months, I shared with you before, 3 months, I said, right, that's it, game over, I'm going to quit. And actually I didn't. And I kept working for another year. And I think on reflection, once I sort of got out the fog of all of being so ingrained in it, that I had a line manager who I'd worked with for years, and there was a lot of mutual trust and respect there. But what that person did was create a space to listen, to hear me. And that really engaged this concept, which is so big in my professional life as an exec coach, of active listening, not listening to answer, but actually meeting that person where they are, because that is their reality. It's not what happened to someone over in accounts or down in supply chain. It's this individual. And I think that's what we need to sort of lean into shared and lived experiences and muscle memory in the workplace, that we have applied that mindset to lots of different areas. The importance of this from parental leave is that we've got those shared learnings and behaviours and skills, but also it doesn't stop there. You know, a woman's life cycle is embraced at every single point. And I think a lot of mistakes happen because it's a case of saying, oh, look, we've navigated back to work. We're really happy with how we've nurtured and supported that individual back from parental leave. Doesn't stop there. And so we have to say to ourselves, what's the next phase and what else do we need to be looking at? And from a bottom line perspective, it makes complete sense, doesn't it? Because you've invested and created this amazing culture to support those people to return from parental leave. So you can't afford to lose them. And we are unfortunately losing women because of menopause. 1 in 10 will quit, 1 in 4 will reduce their hours. And so we know the cost to business is that any woman that is on £25,000 salary per year, it's going to cost that business over 30 to recruit back into that vacant role. So I think there's a better way. And actually, we just have to reconnect with some of our muscle memory and some of the skills that we do have there already.
I think that it's such an important point, because often when I'm working with organisations, there is, not necessarily from a negative place, but there is sometimes a desire to compartmentalise a lot of these workplace conversations, because it can feel a bit neater. It can feel like it's easier to validate and check that you've given the support. If you can see, right, this is what we do for people returning from parental leave. This is what we do for people who have got young children and they're navigating the start of school. There aren't loads of organizations that are great at doing that, but they do exist. I've worked with them. And then, right, we've worked over here to make sure that if somebody's exiting the business through retirement, this is what we do for those people. And then there's kind of, I suppose, not always that sort of cradle to grave mentality, because there's a huge amount in the middle that can get missed. And I think you've touched on that quite a lot, really, in what you've just shared. But it's not uncommon for people to go through multiple life transitions in a very short space of time. And if we do only stick with, right, the conversation I'm having right now with this person is about parental leave because they're going on maternity or adoption leave, or they're returning from equal parental leave, it doesn't mean that you have to then present them with a conversation about, oh, and by the way, we know that you might also start going through perimenopause if you're speaking to somebody who is going to go through it. It's not as clinical as that, is it? It's that organizational narrative of understanding and being very blunt with people to say, no, we're not going to suddenly start asking you on day one of being back in the workplace, having had a child, that then we're going to go down a list of questions and say, right, could you possibly be in perimenopause now? It's much, much softer than that to say, we understand and we appreciate that you can have back-to-back experiences of different life transitions. And we're here for that. We are here to provide whatever support we possibly can. And some of that might be duplicate. So some of the questions that we might ask you to support you in returning from parental leave, for example, might also be similar to the questions that we ask about how do we help you through perimenopause? Or if we've just helped somebody through fertility leave or going through fertility treatment, actually some of the principles there might also map across to other life events. That doesn't take away from how very focused and bespoke those experiences are elsewhere. But from a line manager perspective, that's what we're trying to get them to see, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it goes a lot deeper as well in terms of we have to create really mature systems that are in place in a state of readiness. I think how we're talking about this and approaching women about it has to be handled in a really sophisticated way. And actually, if you go a few layers down, peel back a few more layers of the onion, actually, it's about creating that psychological safety, that space so that women do feel that they can raise this as and when they are ready. Not a case of a business saying, now, here's a checklist, or this is coming next. That would be such an error. So it's really about a case of saying, we have the foundations, we've got the strategy in place, so as and when you give us the green light, this is what we're going to kick in to support you, because we hear you, we see you, we are trained, and we are aware of this. And this is such an individualized approach. It's not a case of saying, hey, women, let's just talk about our perimenopause and menopause to normalize this conversation. No, you have to be really comfortable in your own reality. And I think every woman is very, very different here. And so a strategy and a system in place that acknowledges and respects that is a lot stronger than ones that are just signposting to HR and doing box ticking exercises. Now, I think there is still a huge amount of fear amongst women who typically, once this stage of their life kicks in, are probably very successfully positioned in their career. They've done decades of work to build up a really impressive career. So many are in management roles and very senior exec levels. And so therefore, opening the door to this conversation now is still very, very difficult because of optics, stereotype, and stigma. So we have to go way deeper than that to start building up the right foundation so that if that woman chooses to share, there is absolutely the right level of support that is in place to help them. Mm. And the invitation of what is it that they need that can really best support them, and a mindset to work smarter around this time is really embraced. And so if we're approaching it as a, we need to have a conversation about this, we need to just pause for a bit and think, how do we do that? And what do we put in place in order to make that really successful and robust? And that's a lot of work. But that shouldn't put people off, because I think you reap the benefits later on down the line. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple of things that I've encountered in the last month that I can share is I had a very honest conversation with a corporate client who said, we want to add you to our exec coaching preferred supplier list. So we were going through that discussion. And I said to them, how did you find me? How are your conversations going in this space? And they said, well, it just became really, really clear to us that we had an exec coaching roster that were all white men. And so therefore, we have worked incredibly hard on our women in leadership roles, and it's starting to bear fruit now. And we've got some really, really significant women in senior roles. They're not going to want to go and talk to an exec coach that hasn't had empathy or an experience, or at least can tap into certain skills that those people need in order to explore. So what a lot of organisations are realising is that actually, rather than talking to your manager, can we support and create a space where there is an independent person that comes in and it's all completely confidential? This applies to the work I do around parental leave and women coming back into the workplace through that transition. Actually saying, we want to deepen the support that we offer you. We are going to create this coaching support for you so that you can actually explore your own reality with complete trust and safety. It is quite a powerful thing, because then that person gets that space that is safe and confidential to understand what it is that maybe they can do for themselves and what they might need further support with. So I think, to sort of summarize your point, this is a big piece of work, but actually, if it's done properly and not through a box ticking, we're going to label that we're this, that, and the other around menopause, but actually doing the hard foundational work will absolutely make you a lot more robust as a culture and an inclusive culture moving forward.
That was amazing. And I think what I've ended up doing is probably blending your point two and three together in the last sort of 10, 15 minutes of that conversation. But that just shows actually how intrinsically linked this conversation is. I mean, we often do deal with things like checklists or top tips, but I always try and give the caveat that there's no magic there. You do have to still do something with them. You have to take those ideas and shape them into what works for your business. And that I think is true for this as well. It's been incredibly helpful just to hear the reality, your firsthand experiences, but also the conversations that you're having with clients and some of the things that are in their head right now. So thank you so much for sharing that. Is there anything else that you wanted to add that we haven't got to in this discussion?
I think it's just more an observation, and I guess a little plea to anyone listening that's in a position of influence really is that these subjects that we're talking about here, parental leave, how we're best supporting women, these aren't, I don't think, issues that should be sectioned off into ED&I, for example. A lot of people say, oh, this is about menopause, so that falls into our D&I remit or discussion. I would argue it doesn't. This is a people and a well-being objective. And so I know at this time of the year, there's lots of budgets being reallocated. I think you will be better for it if you are allocating budget to the things that we are talking about here, because otherwise we are losing women. You're probably way more expert and informed about the data of what the workplace is doing for women who are navigating their way back from parental leave and how long we're holding them for. We need to keep women working, and we need to create spaces that actually work for them. And so that takes budget and that takes a commitment, but I think it's absolutely going to benefit your business moving forward.
Yeah, you can definitely put pound, shilling and pence to any sort of investment here. And there is definitely unseen investment as well. This does require time and attention, which I think we don't always call out, and then we expect people to just know these things straight away. But it takes that for a reason. It's a huge conversation, but not one that should be feared, one that should be embraced as, how is this going to make us an even better employer? Because for all those people out there saying the job market's rubbish, nobody's hiring, there's freezes left, right, and centre, I do agree that that is definitely part of the reality. There's no way that I'm going to try and sugarcoat it. However, people are still recruiting. And when you do recruit, you want the best possible talent and you want to be pulling from the biggest possible talent pool you can. And to do that, you have to be focusing on so much now. And I know there's a huge amount of pressure on employers, but there's also, you can do it. There is definitely space to do it. So I hope this part of just this little slice of a conversation that you've heard from us today goes a long way in helping you reflect on some of the things that you might want to put in place as an employer.
Yeah, and it all starts, doesn't it, with opening a conversation. We're just having a conversation. And if you can move that into the workplace, amazing stuff comes from it, because I see it with my intro workshop, which is designed exactly that. Hey, look, we're just going to have this really open, easygoing conversation about this. You suddenly see people have conversations or offer something, and then that's where it goes. And so I think that power of just having a conversation doesn't cost the world, does it? But can have such great impact. So, yeah, maybe that's the first step if you're looking at doing something, is just have that conversation.
Amazing advice. Very, very brilliant and practical. If people want to come and find out more about what you do, Anna, where is best for them to contact you?
So there's my web site. So it's allertoncoaching.com or Anna Allerton on LinkedIn. Come and say hi.
I will pop the links in the show notes for ease as well. So thank you so much for your time and wisdom today, Anna. It's been brilliant. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Power of the Parent, the podcast. If you have got a few spare minutes, who am I kidding? Of course you haven't got a few spare minutes, but if you would like to choose to spend a few of your minutes giving me any sort of review or rating. I would massively appreciate it. It does help other people find it, and it also lets me know that I'm hitting the spot with listeners. For more free resources, you can head to the show notes, where you'll find a link to the Power of the Parent website, or do head on over to LinkedIn and give me a follow. Search Charlotte Speak and my grinning face should pop up. Until next time, take care.